Occupational therapy means action now and in the right direction. Rise, I tell you, lift your mattress and go home. Instantly he got up for them, lifted what he had been lying on, and went home glorifying God. This man, as you see, he was bound. Bound by what? Bound by his own mind, by the condition in which he had. It was the only thing that troubled him in his mind. His mind enveloped the whole thing, and nothing was in it except this condition, therefore he could not see his way out of it. So he was bound. But immediately he rose up and went away, he was freed. Now that is exactly the same with us. But naturally, of course, we will never know freedom until we are bound. Old priest said to the young lady who came to him for repentance, forgiveness, "My dear," he says, "sin is a wonderful thing, because without it you could have no repentance." So you see, neither could you have freedom unless you knew that you were bound. And it's to discern the fact that you are bound, then you are able to have your freedom. And we will enlarge on that as we go along, and we will see what is the thing that binds us most. Beliefs. Beliefs is the thing that binds us most. Nothing binds us more than beliefs. Because if we believe in a belief, then we are bound, we are not free. We're conforming to some particular idea that is not our own. And to a great extent, we know that the ideas that are planted in our own minds are the thing that binds us. We only have to learn this and discern it, then we will find our way to freedom. Jesus said, "Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Tomorrow will take care of itself." There are many roads to freedom. Some will find one road and others will find another. But the fundamentals are much the same. The attitude towards your work is very important. Amusement and play, music and recreation, all these open the way to freedom. Why? Because the first thing to do is to take your mind away from your beliefs, from the things you are caught up in, and tends to allow your mind to reach out. Even if it is out towards the relative, it is better than being caught up in the vicious circle. The habit that most people have acquired is that they live in the tomorrow, and seldom in the present, with the result that they worry about the future while working today. There is nothing more devastating to the nerves than this. When one is happy in the doing today, tomorrow will look after itself. And after all, moment in time is but a moment, moment to moment. Now is eternity. You cannot be out of eternity because you are in now. It's impossible for you to be out of eternity because you're living now, and now is eternity. If you can grasp the fact that infinity means everything, infinity means that there is nothing except infinity. Therefore, infinity is eternal. It must be. And that eternal is now. You can never be anywhere but now. And also to know that infinity is here at this very moment and is everywhere else at the same moment. Infinity is within me and within you at this very moment. Within every one of you, this infinity is in you and me. Infinity is everywhere at the same moment as it is in you and me now. If you can grasp that truth, then you will free yourselves from the relative, because you'll be able to discern the relative. And by discerning the relative, you will know that you are doing it. And therefore, by discerning it, you will free yourself from it. Some will dream of some magical rose garden somewhere in the future. But what you do today makes tomorrow safe. If today I am dreaming of a rose garden that I may get, and if I do not know today that I am, I will never find that rose garden. That becomes a fantasy in my mind. And what am I doing then? I'm living in this fantasy. And yet I'm living here now, and I'm reacting to the conditions in my life. At the same time, I'm living in this fantasy. That is conflict and confusion. If I discern what I am doing, then I can free myself from this fantasy, from this illusion, from this dream, and make this moment real. So tomorrow, as Jesus said, will look after itself. So some will dream of some magical rose garden somewhere in the future, but what you do today makes tomorrow safe. This is the sure way to release habit patterns built through a world of fantasy. Many people live in a world of fantasy while living in a world of reality, with the result that conflict is created between today and tomorrow, which leads to frustration. Many people create nervous tensions through living in embitterment in the present by regretting the past. The past is but an experience that should make you more fit for the present. But what happens to most people? They are embittered in the present because of the past. They don't take that experience and put it into the present, and so it makes the present better and makes you more fit for the present. When people have reached the position where they have acquired an interest in life, they get the utmost out of the present. Joy in action is the key to successful living. You may be asking yourself the question, when shall I start to do this? Next week? Tomorrow? Then tomorrow never comes. The time is now, and there is no other time but now. Take, for instance, the nervous, tensed, and unhappy housewife we spoke of in the last lecture. After she had found interest in her work, she was free. Her work was her salvation, because action with interest leads to freedom. Now she bakes her pies and cakes with excitement. She smiles happily as she listens to her favorite records playing in the next room. Caught up in her work, she feels that freedom, the rhythm of life. She has divorced her nervousness by devotion to something outside herself. Therefore, she is externalizing her own consciousness in something else. She is not caught up in the vicious circle about herself, and she listens to the music that catches that mind, that releases the habit pattern, so the habit pattern begins to disappear. And you will see how easy it is if you apply these things, and you will find that the old tensions will pass away completely from him, and when the tension goes, the habit pattern disappears also. A few months ago, she was a neurotic. Now she sleeps restfully and awakens up refreshed. Why? Because she has found how to combine work and play. Sick, nervous, self-inhibited people have to learn to play. You're grinding all the time. You're grinding about your work, you're grinding about your house, you're grinding about because there's a spot here and a spot there, the cushion is not right here and the cushion is not right there. The carpet is turned up at the corner, somebody throws their hat in a chair, the paper is left beside, and the whole story is a little of cigarette ash all over the place, and your mind goes in a whirl, and you go into a whirl too. And before you know where you are upside down. Your heart begins to flutter and patter, and then you get angry and you begin to shout. And as soon as you begin to shout, the other person shouts back and says, "What the hell are you about? Do you think this house is just a place for you to look at? It's a place to live, isn't it?" So the whole story goes on more and more, and you get worse. And then what happens? Soon the nervous breakdown, habit pattern. Those sick, apathetic, nervous, self-inhibited people who take no pleasure in anything must learn to play. For the spirit of play will bring them back to health. Almost anything you do can become play. Get happiness out of your work. Your work may be serious work, yet you can find enjoyment in it if you know how to play at your work. It's a wonderful thing to know how to play at your work. I play at my work every day because I enjoy it. I laugh and I joke and I enjoy it. People laugh and they get better. Why, you get a sour face and before you know where you are, you have them laughing and then you have them well. That's the first step to get well. If your work takes all the sunshine out of your life, then it's not worthwhile. That work will be there when you're dead. But work done in the spirit of pleasure is recreation. You can get great pleasure in the exercise of your gift. Some people have gifts, but they don't exercise them. They start and then they half finish a thing and they lay it down and therefore they say, "I'm too sick to go further on with it, and so far I don't too well." Do you know that the exercise of that gift will make you well? It will take your mind off yourself. It will make you do things. It will make you happy. You'll see your mind expanding, and it'll take it away from your own selves. It frees your brain from old habit patterns that before held you bound in your own inhibitions. Bring the spirit of play into everything you do. Play is not the same thing as work, yet the spirit of play enables you to work with interest and leads to freedom. So tomorrow, when you go to work, and if you're the boss, you say you're going to play. And if you are not the boss, you're going to tell the boss that you're going to play. "I'm going to play at my work." And you'll find that the work will be a lot better and happier. And people around you will feel your enthusiasm. It is catching. It's infectious. You can have great pleasure in your exercise of your gift. So that is one of the great things you must see. So get on with it. You have a gift, many of you, and you don't utilize it. Perhaps you have never learned to play. Play is necessary to the growth of a child. A boy and girl who does not play becomes neurotic. Same applies to those grown up, because we are all children. We are all boys and girls. Gosh, if I wasn't a boy, I wouldn't think myself living at all. Really, I got the feeling that I'm a boy. And it is the boyishness and the girlishness that is in you that makes love wild. You become an old woman, an old man, if you're not a boy or a girl. Feel that flowing interest, that youthful feeling. That's the thing. It's nothing better, I can assure you. Those who cannot work because of their self-imposed inhibitions will find a simple desire to play is a mild suggestion towards activity and freedom. So some people get so bad that they can't even work. They can't even do anything. They can't even play. They sit down and mope, and everything is terrible. The only thing is to get that person to do something in the way of playing or doing something, then they get well. I had recently a woman in Johannesburg who had a very bad nervous breakdown. We were going to send her away to a mental home. They told me the position, and there were children in the home, there were other people in the home as well, and they were always telling the children couldn't make a noise, they had to walk on their tiptoes here, and they couldn't bang a door, and they couldn't do anything because of this passion. I said, you're going to send her to a mental home? My God, I said, you'll have plenty of noise there, you can't keep the people there from making a noise. They will shout and scream and dance, and I says, that's the thing you must do here now. You must let those children fly along the carpet. Let them make a noise and all that, and send her to me. So when I got her to me, I got her to do small things. I got her doing the flowers at home, getting the flowers out into the garden and so forth. And you know, before very long, she was entirely and completely well. Tiptoeing all over the place. Oh, you mustn't make a noise. Your grandmother is, she's ill, she's sick. You see, you can't bear a noise. The whole thing was keeping the person in that state because she liked it. She had the whole house in the palm of her hand. It was nice for her to have the whole house in the palm of her hand. Quite good. That was feeding her nervous trouble. But when I changed the situation, Sishun changed her situation too. And when she began to do something, she lost this business. And it's the same with everyone else. Those who cannot work because of their self-imposed inhibitions will find a simple desire to play is a mild suggestion towards activity and freedom. I told you before that strong suggestions and affirmations created the opposite. That is why play does not arouse strong resistance against doing anything. Strong suggestions raises the very opposite of what you want. Instead of you getting them out of the state, push them deeper into it. Mild suggestion in the form of play, of music, harmonizes the soul. You will find also, if you are nervous, if you are irritated, if you are tired, listen to some music that calms you. Not the jitterbug music, of course. If you find that the desire to play is gone, you can sit in the sunshine, relax and build castles in the air. I've witnessed neurotic parents at the seaside watch their children build houses of sand. Shockley's suggestion to take a hand in the building of a sandhouse has led them back to freedom. This relaxation released them from their inhibitions and let the cells of the brain work again. When a state of collapse takes place, a few cells of the brain are controlling the whole brain. Thus, you have a dictatorship imposed upon ourselves. If an idea dominates you, then it will dominate the whole of the brain cells. That's why a belief is often the hindrance to your true expression. I witnessed the picture the other night. It was lovely to look at. But to me, it was the most stupid thing I've ever seen. It was the Holy Year at Rome. The procession started with all the people with their flowing garments. The guard with their spears and helmets and breastplates. Then the Pope was carried in a gondola on the shoulders of 16 people. And as he walked through, flowing gowns were coming over and the great big hats of gold and so forth. All this sort of thing was going on, and then he had to go to a door. And he had a hammer, and he had to strike this door. Then he had another two taps, and then he had to do it again a third time, and the door opened. Now he entered into heaven. All this to me was so terribly stupid, following the teachings of a man, Jesus, who walked on the sand with his sandals, who had no pomp and raiment, who had no gold and silver surrounding him, but that simple man, that simple truth of the Christ, just that simple truth, with no blare of trumpets. And here we see this so supposed to be the representative of Jesus the Christ. I'm not saying that that particular form of religion is the only one that does the same. We see it in all the religions with their top hats and their flowing robes and their wonderful businesses, and the people begin to bow down, kiss the stones, the walk on, and the rest of all this sort of. Did Jesus tell you to do that? When I see it, I feel so disgusted within myself. I say, how can man suffer this? But the blind lead the blind, and they all fall into. You may not be doing much, but what you are doing must be pleasant and enjoyable. Then it is curative. Every part of your body will be sending messages back to the cerebellum, which will give up its misbehavior. Then the messages from the cerebellum to the cerebrum will help to release the old chain of habit patterns and inhibitions. The brakes are taken off, and God does the rest of the work. Tension must first of all come through the mind. It must affect the brain. The brain then through the nervous system onto the muscles of the body. When these tensions take place, a message is sent back to the cerebellum. And the cerebellum accepts that message of tension and creates the habit pattern. It is quite easy to see When the body talks back, then you've got it. If you can discern why the body talks back, then you can free yourselves. When you have a fright, for instance, it goes to your body and your body shakes. The message comes back to the cerebellum. And the cerebellum then feels the sensation in your body. It's automatic in nature. It doesn't think for itself. It only creates what it feels. So therefore, if you feel sick, so you will find the cerebellum will accept that story. Say, all right, you're sick. It controls the heart. When you are frightened, then you will find the cerebellum causes the heart to flutter. It will cause all the muscles of the body to become tense. Then if that goes on continuously, like the chap I told you about the other day, had what we call a heart complex. He came to see me in Johannesburg. He'd been told 4 years ago that he had an enlarged heart. Then he read everything he could about an enlarged heart, and he got a heart complex. He went to another specialist, and the specialist told him there's nothing wrong with your heart. He went back to him again and said, get the hell out of here. He says, there's nothing wrong with your heart. I showed him how his heart complex came about, how the fear got it, and how this inhibition caused his heart to play up for him. And after I took the whole thing away through relaxation and divine reason, after I was finished with him, I said, go down now, walk down to the bottom of Jubeer Street. That's the way down to the station. That's about a quarter of a mile almost. Come back and see me, tell me how you feel. He looked at me in amazement. He says, how am I going to walk down there where I can't walk? I said, go out and try. Go out and walk. So he went out and he tried and walked. And he found that he could walk down to Beer Street and he walked. I said, how do you feel? He said, I feel fine. I said, you're cured. That's your 4 years' trouble now gone. Now you see, here is the same thing. The misbehavior that was here was given up. Given up, mind. This is the automatic. It controls your glands, too. It controls your thyroid glands. It controls your ovaries. It controls all these glands. The hormones and all the things that's working, that is controlling it. Your sensations, your fears, your emotions all work through this area and they have the effect upon your glands, make the glands either secrete or not secrete, whatever the case may be. Now, how are you going to get rid of this? Not by the vicious circle, that's a certainty. But by knowing, by taking attention off the muscles of the body and the body, by divine reasoning and discerning what you're doing, then you'll find that this will give up its misbehavior. You will know that the body has been released, and then you begin to get better. That is then the vicious circle in the opposite direction. So instead of going negatively, begins to go positive and then frees you. But I say again that you cannot be freed unless you discern what you are doing. Many people fear their own thoughts. They're afraid to think of things of the past. Painful memories have bound them into neurotics can do nothing. That's what I always see clearly when I think of people thinking of the past. Jesus said to the man, was lying down there, he says, your sins are forgiven you, get up and walk. Meaning to say, you're no longer bound, you fool, rise. Pick up your bed and walk. I would be surprised that he said those words too, but it's pretty written language. He was a man, not the man that he's painted to be, sort of a man of tears and a man of woe. But I believe his laughter could be heard all over the place. And his voice was strong, could be heard for a long distance. You could hear his voice a long way off. And I reckon that was true too. And he was no sissy, as most people make him out to be. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, look upon this little child. Jesus took the rope, put knots on it, and he went to the temple, and you devils, get out of here. Was that the gentle Jesus, meek and mild? I reckon he was the strongest man the world has ever seen. Because he had deserved everything that relative. And by doing so, he knew his own power because he had found that which was real. Painful memories have bound them into neurotics can do nothing because they have pushed them further into the recesses of the mind. The great and wonderful truth is that you can take all things to Christ of God, and there have them dissolved away into nothingness for the belong. When we have thus examined our fears and phobias, we can destroy their power over us. We free ourselves not by introspection, but by discerning our thought action. Introspection is of no value to you. It is discerning your thought action, your immediate activities that counts. When the soul is filled with divine light, there can be no darkness. The flame of love can always reach the darkest corner. God is love and love is God. Cause of effect. God resides in me, that God resides in you. And because he is infinite, he cannot be anywhere else but in you and me. There is his place. He is everywhere, in you and me, and at the same time, everywhere. Therefore, to be complete in himself, and to be whole in himself, the only emotion he can have is an emotion of love that we know from our own experience of the inner feelings of ourselves when we are deeply in love without jealousy or envy. But the only love that you and I have very often is hate, and hate is love. Both are to the end of the same stick, because they are relative. But the love of God is not relative, it's a reality. Now can you discern what you're doing? The love of God is eternal and ever-present. It is something that cannot be defined. You cannot tell me what it is. Because it is the growth in everything. The growth in me, the growth in you, the growth in the flower, the growth in the angels, the growth in the heavens, the growth in the stars, the growth everywhere. That's the love of God. I always find that divine reasoning is essential to our freedom. The mind that grasps the truth acquires the faith that makes us whole. Then every simple virtue or principle in the storehouse of nature will be expressed through the individual who knows. Through the brain mind, the knowledge of the universe is made personal. In my last lecture, I said that I would tell you more about the perception of unmemory and how to acquire it. And as these are practical lessons, the practice of the exercises I give you will be of great benefit to you in your daily activities, thus making you more proficient in every way, enabling you to make a success of your lives in a practical way. We know that attention cuts a channel through which knowledge flows. We also know that attention exercises the power of perception. We saw in our last lesson that attention also brings into play the power of association and gives the loose ends of an enormous infinite chain of associated facts stored away in our memory, forming new combinations of facts which we have never grasped before, and brings into the field of consciousness all the many scraps of information regarding the thing to which we are giving attention to. We see clearly then that attention is one of the most wonderful things. And once we've mastered voluntary attention, we have mastered everything, because attention is the point to which the power flows. I want to heal anybody. I want to help them in any way. What do? I attend to them this way, in my mind. I bring them up to me. I say to them this way, God does not suffer from this. You are God's child. He lives in you and you live in him. Your roots are in him. Therefore, you grow out of him. The intelligence in your body must be perfect. In your own mind, you have created this condition. This is a seed that has grown into your mind, like a seed that's sown in the air, sometimes unconsciously, but nevertheless it grows. Now you're beginning to fear it. And I silently say to them, now listen to me. It has no power of its own. You're divine in nature. How do I talk to that person? I should like to know. Do I say the word? No, I speak to your soul that knows my thought. I correct the error in your soul, and your soul receives, and the error begins to dissolve away. And you will give up then. You believe in these conditions. I believe that most people are caught up in this belief of their troubles. And where are their troubles? Your body is mind materialized. And if your body is mind materialized, it's only the materialization of the mind, is it not? And what's in the body must be in the mind, is it not? It's not in the intelligence that made the body, because it's perfect. It's the love of God manifesting itself in perfection. As one person came to me not very long ago and says, God has visited me with this terrible thing. I says, well, why do you come to me to get you cured? Do you think I'm greater than God? If God put it on you, how am I going to take it away from you? As if God bestows nothing like that upon any individual. Remember this, that if this is a relative thing, if it is a temporary thing, it cannot be of God, because God is eternal and ever-present. And there is nothing temporary with God. The infinite must be complete. How could I then teach you if you cannot understand my words that I speak to you through my mouth? Is it not better that I speak to your soul? All the memories and all the facts that you have learned are stored away in the mind. So we will say there is a center of consciousness, the point through which everything must come before the consciousness. So the consciousness is concentrated on a particular subject or object, we will say here. When all the facts that are in the mind begin to flow in, until such time as they rise into the consciousness, all associated with one another to make new knowledge. Scraps of information you never knew that were existing in your mind at all to become useful knowledge when you use your mind properly for the application of attention. In my training with the masters, I had all sorts of training to do, prove many things to myself. And that's the only way that you can do it too. I can't prove it for you. But I tell you, I know what I'm talking about, because I talk from practical experience. So we see attention also brings into play the power of association and gives us a loose end of an almost infinite chain of associated facts stored away in our memory, forming new combinations of facts which we have never grasped before, and brings into the field of consciousness all the many scraps of information regarding the thing to which we are giving attention. The proof of this is within the experience of everyone. When you sit down to do some writing, painting, reading, with interest and attention, we find much to our surprise a flow of facts regarding the matter in hand passing through our minds, enabling us to combine, associate, and classify, thus creating new knowledge. The more attention we give to anything, the more we are likely to remember it. It is in the general sense thought that our memory is at fault. Yet it is our attention that is weak. Elderly people can relate things that happened in their younger days with accuracy, yet their memory of recent events is poor. So a man came to me, a doctor in Johannesburg yesterday. He hurt his arm and his shoulder and his head. He'd been to all the specialists all round the place, but they could nothing for him, advised him to put the wind up him very badly. But in a short time, I had the pain away from his hand and his arm free. He told me his age. He says he was 55, and he looked 85. He said he was losing his memory. He was losing his grip on life. So I said to him, "Who do you think I am, if you're losing your grip on life at 55? "Oh," he says, "you're about 50. I says, "Put another 20 years on to that, or a little more." He says, "Well, you're a better man than me. And I'm only 50. I said, "Well, I'll tell you. You've been delving in the wrong things. If you could take your mind off those sort of things you've been delving in, in matter and thinking of matter and living in disease all your life, not understanding it, I said, you'd be a better man. So I started in educating him a little bit. And he went out of that room a different fellow, I can assure you. He says, how soon can I see you again? I said, well, you can see the desk there, and he was there, he will give you another appointment. So he wanted to get in as soon as he possibly could. Could I get in sooner and sooner? I said, I'm sorry. He saw a glimmer of the light of the truth that could set him free. Elderly people can relate things that happened in the younger days with accuracy, that their memory for recent events are poor. This is because they do not apply their attention. Thus they do not get clear impressions, which is the foundation of memory. If their memory was at fault, it would be difficult to recall any event far distant or recent. So it is not the memory at its fault, but unable to apply attention, one-pointed attention. This exercise will help you to get vivid impressions. Take a familiar object, place it before you, and study its shape, color, etc. Reduce it to its smallest parts, dissect it mentally, and study its parts in detail. Study each part separately, get a clear impression. After you have made a thorough investigation, take a piece of paper and write down what you have observed and compare it with the article itself and see how many items you have failed to see. This is a game for the family. It is fun. It is very interesting to see what one sees and what another does not see. You'll find that one person will see a lot of details, and the other person will not see those details at all. Why does the person see those details and not the other details? And why does the person see the details that another does not see? Try it out in your own home and see what fun it is. Make it fun. It releases tension, clears the brain, makes your memory strong, and teaches you observation, and strengthens your attention all in one. That very thing does all these things in one, because you're applying yourselves. Take up the article the next night and re-examine it and make more notes. You will find that you have discovered more details. This exercise has made many a one a great success in life. Learning to perceive through attention increases memory. These are the foundations of a successful life. A simple exercise, but one of the most wonderful. He heard the story of the professor when a student come to him to be taught. And he said to him, all right, he said, go down to the museum, and he took a fish out of a case, and he said, observe what you see in that fish and tell me all about it. So after a couple of hours, the fellow came up and he told all. He says, you haven't seen anything of the fish yet. So he went back and he did some more, and he came back next day and he said, well, this is what I found. He says, the professor, you have not seen anything of the fish yet. So he went back down again and he studied, and he came back another day, and the professor said, well, you haven't seen anything of the fish yet. Then he got down to real observation. And he started drawing every portion of the fish, and he found all the different things that fish were so multitudinous. He went back and he said, then the professor said, now, he said, I see that you have learned observation. Please apply it in the remainder of your life. So that professor was one of the best teachers. because he enabled the student to learn observation. When entering a place, endeavor to get all the details taken one at a time. Make mental impressions. When you go out, write them down. When you meet a person, make a mental note of the nose, eyes, ears, mouth, temples, chin, etc. It is a fascinating game and leads to success through observation. A little practice goes a long way and can be enjoyable. The powers you will develop by these exercises will be enormous. You will develop in every direction in a pleasurable way. It releases tension, frees the don't-do cells to become yes-do cells. In acquiring the art of perception, you should not attempt to perceive the whole of an object at once. The best way is to consider each detail, then group the details. Then you will find you have considered the whole accurately. The Chinese philosophy of life is to accept the worst, then you have everything to gain. They say that this gives a sense of peace, and then you are able to think. There is some truth in this Chinese philosophy, yet there is more to it than this. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. That is the greater and most powerful thing there is in the world. Seek ye the kingdom of God. And where is the kingdom of God? In you. In yourselves. And then when you have found it, make the right use of it. All things shall be added in. We must first find the kingdom of power within so that we can attract, hold, and materialize the external. The power is within. The substance is within. The way is within. And all leads to freedom. For whoever hath to him shall be given, and he shall have more in abundance. Matthew 13:12. Benediction. O Spirit of life, thou art in front of me, behind me, to the left of me, to the right of me, above and beneath, within and without. Thou art everywhere. O Spirit of life, teach me to heal my body and revitalize my soul with thy cosmic force. Then my mind will flourish with wisdom. Let my meditation be strong through the intuition of thy presence, making thyself known to me every moment of time, O Spirit.